Broadcast out of New York City, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health on Monday, July 30th, 2012. I'm Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicki Saputo. Thank you for joining us on our weekly Prescriptions for Health show on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com every Monday live from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time and from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Pacific Time. And remember that our shows are archived on DrSaputo.com and PRN.fm.
Today you're going to hear Vicki's 2020 health tips at 20 after the hour and 20 to the hour. And we've got a great show for you today. While we're in lively Las Vegas, overlapping business pleasure weekend, that's going to include, here we go again, the poly pill for primary prevention, give me a break.
And the downside of testing kids for cholesterol?
And how about managing heartburn to prevent esophageal cancer without getting esophageal cancer?
And how is Europe preventing 50% of deaths from cardiovascular disease?
And much more.
And if you'd like to join in our conversation and have questions about our topics or your health, give us a call on Mondays from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Time or 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN.fm at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888.
You know, we've had a really good time this weekend. We've been hosted by the vitamin company, DrVita.com, and staying with Wayne Gorsuch down here. You know, and the reason we're down here is because we like to check out everything that we do in any business deal that may be representing us or the kinds of things that we present to our audiences.
Well, not only that, it's really been interesting to tour DrVita.com just to see how the manufacturing of supplements can be. And I'm really impressed. Well, both of us are impressed with the quality of this facility. I mean, it is so clean, you could lick the floor.
Well, I don't know if you'd want to do that.
Well, you could.
Yeah, you could.
I mean, they do above and beyond the requirements for quality, clean products, and they go the extra mile with their integrity and their enthusiasm to make the best supplements at the best prices.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what I like. And by the way, this is not a paid commercial. We have no affiliation with the company at all.
We're just enthusiastic about what we've experienced this weekend.
Part of what I like about it is he's invested $10 million of his own money to set up a foundation that will produce really solid supplements and then sell them at a price that's reasonable. So we're looking into the business side of this, and we'll see what develops in the future.
Well, 9 years ago, we reported on Prescriptions for Health about the poly pill, when there was some unbelievable, silly discussion about putting a blood pressure pill and a statin to lower cholesterol and a diuretic and aspirin in the water supply in the name of prevention. Well, the poly pill is now in the news again. So tell us about the UK trial on the poly pill given to people starting at age 50 as primary prevention of cardiovascular disease with reductions in blood pressure and cholesterol without a prescription.
And this is, to me, no more than simple insanity. It's business. Somebody's trying to make a profit or to protect an investment someplace. And I don't know how to tell you how disappointed I am in the Public Library of Science, which is one solid journal most of the time. But when they publish crap like this, it's just too much for me. When you're looking at putting together all these pills in the forms that they're in to try and make a product to prevent something that should be prevented by lifestyle in the first place, you've gone too far.
Well, at least they took aspirin out of it this time.
Well, that's something, but they've got three antihypertensives in there, and they've got statins in there. And look at the side effects. They're saying something like you'd expect 29% of people to have side effects, but you'd prevent a lot of heart disease, a lot of people who had strokes. I mean, that may be that you would prevent some, but at what price?
Well, first of all, if everybody took a blood pressure pill, that doesn't
one,
make
try three.
That or take three blood pressure pills. I mean, if I took one, it would probably kill me because my blood pressure is really low normally. And you, the other day, were playing tennis, and you came home, and you were so weak. In fact, you couldn't even finish the tennis match. You had to lie down on the table. And that was lowering your blood pressure just from exercise, which shows how effective exercise is.
Well, let me explain something to people out there. You know, heart attacks and strokes are caused by what? Insufficient blood flow, right? And there are lots of ways to get insufficient blood flow. One way would be to have a blockage. Okay, that's where you have arteriosclerosis. You got a plaque in there, and what happens is that plaque eventually ruptures. It blocks the artery off. There's no blood flow. That's one way.
And everybody's blaming the cholesterol for the heart attacks and the strokes,
right,
and it's the inflammation that causes the cholesterol.
But there are two other problems that are important, too. One is if you have a ruptured blood vessel, and that's what happens in hypertension. That would interfere with blood flow to the tissues distally. But the third thing, and maybe most importantly because of this topic, is if you don't have enough blood pressure to put blood through. So if your blood pressure drops to 60 or to 50 or to 70, and you have a blockage there to start with because you're over 50 and you've got arteriosclerosis, what do you think is going to happen to the blood flow to the brain or to the heart?
It's not going to get through very well.
And if it doesn't get through very well, you wind up with a heart attack or a stroke that way. We may cause more heart attacks than we prevent. And when you look at a study that has 86 people in it, that's only for a few weeks, and it's published in this journal, how outrageous can you get?
And they're claiming that it's going to reduce ischemic heart disease 72% and stroke by 64% on this big study of 84 patients.
All right, so here we've got something that's nuts. Let's look at the side effects to just something simple like a diuretic. How many people are taking hydrochlorothiazide for their problem?
Raise your hand. We can't see you. But
well, it's an enormous number of people that are taking that drug as the first approach. And now let's look at the side effects that you see from a drug like hydrochlorothiazide, which is thought is just a little diuretic. Well, one, it will lower your level of magnesium. It'll lower your level of potassium. Hardly anybody is replacing magnesium, and if you don't replace that, you'll actually raise blood pressure, you'll put yourself at risk for muscle cramps, you'll put yourself at risk for asthma, and lots of other cardiovascular problems. And that doesn't even pay attention to the potassium. Second, it's going to raise your cholesterol, not something you particularly want if you have a problem and have bad cholesterol. Third, it's going to cause problems with insulin resistance, which means that you'll be more prone to developing type 2 diabetes.
Then they can add more pills to the water.
That's right. And fourth, it raises your uric acid, so it puts you at risk for what? Gout. Now, that's just one of the pills, and it's supposed to be the mild one. Now, let's take a look at the statins. What do they do? The statins are a much bigger problem because what they lead to is liver disease. If you have liver disease, you can't take it. It will affect muscles in most people who are on it, and so they should be replacing with coenzyme Q10 to prevent that, but nobody does.
It can destroy the muscles and in the process clog up the kidneys.
Exactly, and it causes muscle weakness and muscle pain. It can cause peripheral neuropathies, which is not something that's very pleasant to have. It can cause global amnesia. Now, that's something.
Well, so I can just visualize the population walking around with all these symptoms.
Well, I'll say.
But they have amnesia, so it's not going to bother them.
Well, maybe, but what's bothering me is I can't see how anybody on the basis of a short-term study that is only looking at one aspect of what's happening here can actually have the courage to write an article and then to have this amazing medical journal publish it, to me, is just too much. Why don't they do something like compare it to lifestyle? Because there are no side effects at all, and there are lots of issues that come up. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. Now, we're opening up the lines. If you have a question about your health, give us a call, and we'll be back after Vicki's first 2020 tip.
And unforgiveness can just eat at us, and it can make us sick. So I have a story for you from one of our listeners, Mike, and I'd like to throw out that if you have any stories or tips or jokes to share for the show, that you can email them to me at Vicki, V-I-C-K-I, at drsaputo.com. So I have a story called The Stone, Unforgiveness. So there's two friends walking through the desert, and during some point of the journey, they had an argument, and one friend slapped the other one in the face. Well, the one who got slapped was hurt, but without saying anything, he wrote in the sand, "Today, my best friend slapped me in the face.
Well, they kept on walking until they found an oasis where they decided to take a bath. Well, the one who had been slapped got stuck in the mire and he started drowning, but the friend saved him. Well, after he recovered from the near drowning, he wrote on a stone, "Today, my best friend saved my life." Well, the friend who'd slapped and saved his best friend asked him, "After I hurt you, you wrote in the sand, and now you write on the stone. Why?" Well, the friend replied, "When someone hurts us, we should write it down in sand, where the winds of forgiveness can erase it away and let it go. But when someone does something good for us, we must engrave it in stone where no wind can ever erase it." So isn't that the truth?
You know, that's amazing, Vicki. A lot of those things we just take for granted and we forget. And the most important thing in life is what? It's our relationships. And so if we could stay with relationships that are healthy, it would be really a fantastic thing, because that's what life is about. And yet we get stuck in all these materialistic things, and we carry these grudges, and we carry them along, and we pay for it.
And I have a couple of tips that fit right in with this story. Take the time to live and nurture your meaningful relationships.
Indeed.
That's one. The other one is, don't value the things you have in your life, but value who you have known in your life. And remember, stress and anger and unforgiveness can eat at us and make us sick. So be kinder than necessary, for everyone you meet is fighting some kind of a battle.
Well, see, the things that you think have a powerful effect on your biochemistry and on your physiology. And that's going to determine an awful lot of how you feel. It determines your immunity. It determines your quality of life. It does all these things that are absolutely critical to keep you in a place where you're feeling good about who you are and how you're relating.
So the topic is statins.
All right. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
Well, just, you know, talking about the statin and the polypill, the topic of statins isn't a new one. And cholesterol-lowering drugs can have dangerous side effects, and a healthy lifestyle, especially exercise and a healthy diet, are the best medicine. So now it seems that there may be a push for kids to take these cholesterol-lowering drugs due to the obesity epidemic in kids, you know, giving them a disease, like it's called dyslipidemia.
Well,
that's like what the pharmaceutical companies create, like they did with the osteopenia.
You know, you got to give them credit. They are absolutely brilliant. If they're not selling enough, these greedy guys, if they're not greedy bastards is what they are, if they aren't selling enough, they find ways to sell more. So what do they do when it comes to the osteoporosis drugs? They say, well, only 10 million Americans have osteoporosis, but you know, there are another 55 million who are at the low end of normal. How about we get a bunch of doctors together, wine them and dine them, and have a little conference and talk about, gee, it might be a good idea, by proclamation, of course, to have these people treated with the bisphosphonate drugs, things like Fosamax and Actonel and Boniva. Wouldn't it be a good thing if we could convince them to give it before they get osteoporosis, so it's prevention? And, of course, that's what happened.
But, hello, there's a few side effects you can get from those drugs that are actually kind of like chemotherapy.
Well, this is the same thing now that they're doing here. These kids that have problems with their cholesterol, and we're calling it dyslipidemia, what do they have? They're overweight.
They need to lose weight. They need to eat a healthy diet, and they need to get more exercise and get off that texting. And
how about we treat that rather than identify millions more of kids that we could start thinking about, should we start them on statins?
And maybe put
PE
back in all the schools.
Well, what a thought. That should be in every school at every level, because exercise is the most powerful anti-aging medicine we have. It raises all the hormones that we need to be healthy. It makes us feel good. It gives us endurance. It's antidepressant. It's the most powerful anti-aging medicine there is. And yet we've got this whole field of anti-aging medicine that drives me insane. People taking hormones, you know, for the thyroid and for their adrenals and for every other thing you can think of to try and keep them young again, because as we age, those levels drop. But if you want to fix them, get into an exercise program first. Get your weight down. Reduce your stress levels. Feel good about who you are. Do all those things, and you're going to be a lot healthier.
So let's talk about the recent guidelines for kids to have cholesterol testing and the conflict of interest among the authors of those guidelines.
like a lot of the people that wrote up these guidelines, have interest in the labs and in the pharmaceutical drugs.
Well, what they want to do, of course, is to start screening kids when they're almost out of the womb to see what, you know, how many of them are at risk for having potential problems with arteriosclerotic issues like heart attacks and strokes. And they've gotten down to the place now where they say, yeah, at age two, we should start doing that because, of course, that's really important. But in fact, all we're going to do is identify a bunch of kids that today are overweight. And the problem is, why don't we treat the problem instead of treating the symptoms? It's like, you know, the brake light goes off on your dashboard, and you treat the symptom by putting a Band-Aid over it, but it doesn't change the brakes, and it's the same thing here. You fix just part of the problem with the drug, you're asking for trouble.
And this is going to cost billions of dollars, or it would cost billions of dollars in lab tests and even more on the drugs. And the authors of these guidelines have the conflicts of interest. They own interest in the labs and the drugs, so it helps them. I don't think, and also the Institute of Medicine doesn't think that people that have a conflict of interest should be able to vote on these panels.
Well, what you're talking about is the same thing as at the FDA. About 25% of the FDA is made up of what? It's made up of consultants that come from where? Try Big Pharma. And believe it or not, they actually get a vote. Now, mind you, I think their information's important, and we should know about it. And they should be on those committees, but they shouldn't have a vote. When you see some of the things that they have done in the past to get drugs that within a few months or a couple of years have black box warnings or taken off the market because they've killed or maimed too many people, it's just stunning. And to me, I call that pharmacide. I think that what's happening is we're killing a lot of people by this collusion that we have, this conflict of interest in the revolving doors between the FDA, the CDC, and, of course, Big Pharma.
And, you know, too, they try to talk like we're trying to cut back costs in health care, but this wouldn't cut back costs. This would increase costs. This is about just making money, it sounds like.
Well, you know, 18% of the gross national product is what? It's health care. And with health care, what kinds of problems come with it? All these things that we're talking about. So we need to revamp what's happening, but we really need to revamp what we as people of this country think. We need to think for ourselves. We have to stop listening to the pharmaceutical industry, the CDC, the FDA, the World Health Organization, the White House, and all these kinds of organizations that are similar, and start taking responsibility ourselves for the style in which we live our life, because that is where all this information comes from. So we need to make those changes. So you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888, and we'll be back after a short commercial break. Welcome back to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. So if you have a question about your health or you want to join in our conversation, just give us a call.
We've all seen ads for the purple pill, you know, Nexium and
Prilosec.
Yeah, you know, all those drugs.
For acid effects, there's a ton of them.
For acid reflux. But what do we really know about the value of these pills in preventing esophageal cancer? Now, acid that refluxes into the lower end of the esophagus causes heartburn, and it can lead to ulcers in the esophagus and maybe even to precancerous or cancerous conditions.
Well, some people think that.
So tell us about Barrett's esophagus and how it relates to cancer of the esophagus.
Okay, see, this whole topic gets confusing, and I'll have to say most people haven't got a clue. Even those that have hiatal hernias don't understand what's happened there. In fact, most doctors don't, because they think it's the acid that's causing the Barrett's esophagus in the first place. And there was a great article coming out a few months ago that talked about what causes what is called the intestinalization of the lower end of the esophagus. And what do I mean by that? That there's a change in the of the cell makeup at the place where the esophagus joins the stomach that creates a kind of tissue that's called Barrett's esophagus. And what causes it is when bile refluxes from the duodenum into the stomach to the lower end of the esophagus, and it causes these biochemical changes that make the esophagus look like the small intestine.
So the bile is going up instead of down.
Yes.
I wonder if there's anything that
can be done about that to change the direction?
Well, nobody knows that I'm aware of how to do that. It's an observation that we've made, and we know that that's what happens. So when we have bile, as we do, passing through the duodenum and going to the small intestine, it may have a lot to determine what that mucosa is going to look like, and that's what makes it look like a small intestine. So when the bile goes the other way and it gets to the lower end of the esophagus, it causes the Barrett's esophagus to occur. So it's the bile that does it, not the acid.
So should people that have Barrett's esophagus be afraid of getting cancer? And what's the difference between Barrett's dysplasia and then the type of cancer is adenocarcinoma, which is pretty dangerous?
Well, see, once you have Barrett's esophagus, everybody freaks out, because what we're doing is we're lumping everybody with Barrett's esophagus into one group rather than into subgroups, much like what we did with cholesterol back in the 70s, where we lumped everybody with cholesterol into one category that says, is it high or is it low? And we found that those people that had higher cholesterols had a higher level of heart attacks and strokes. So as we learned more about cholesterol, we found out there were fractions, that there are different kinds. There was LDL and HDL. And then we found out there are many different kinds of LDL and many different kinds of HDL. And that made a huge difference in how we looked at things in terms of what was actually the culprit. Now, when we have something like Barrett's esophagus, there are different kinds of problems with Barrett's esophagus as well. So when we're looking at Barrett's esophagus, what we're seeing is that some people who have dysplasia, which means a precancerous lesion, they're the ones that are most apt to come down with the cancer of the esophagus. But those that don't have dysplasia but still have Barrett's esophagus are most unlikely to develop it. So now they don't
really have to be panicked and afraid then if they have a diagnosis of Barrett's esophagus.
No, but you still have to go down to begin with into the esophagus with an endoscope and see what's there. So I'm for doing endoscopy to make an assessment to say, one, do you have a hiatal hernia? Because until you really have looked there, you can't be certain. However, when you do have it, then you have a way of saying, well, are they at risk for developing cancer? So you see the Barrett's esophagus there. They're in the group that you wish they weren't. But of those that have the Barrett's esophagus, when you biopsy that, you can see whether or not these are changes, if there are changes there that are precancerous. And if there is this thing called dysplasia, it's precancerous. And then your risk is probably 1 in about 100 or maybe 200 per year or percent will develop esophageal cancer. So the ones with dysplasia should be checked frequently, maybe every year or two, something like that. And the ones without it, you can leave them alone for 5 years.
So to check them means passing a tube down their esophagus.
Yeah, with a light and a camera.
And a light and a camera. And that sometimes they can take biopsies, and sometimes they can remove some of the tissue that's affected. And it's a lot better than how it used to be before they had endoscopies, because they used to have to do it in a way that it was a major surgery.
Well, to try and fix, okay, the problem, if you have Barrett's esophagus and you have dysplasia, may involve something called high-frequency radioablation, which isn't the hardest thing in the world to do, but it can solve the problem because it gets rid of the changes that cause Barrett's esophagus. So this whole topic is one that gets confusing a lot of the time, and most people don't know what to do, and most doctors don't realize, because the information that we're talking about is relatively new, that we need to determine the subclasses of people who have Barrett's esophagus.
You know, there was another article claiming that aspirin and the NSAIDs, the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, you know, like ibuprofen and Motrin and Advil and so forth, reduce the risk of Barrett's and esophageal cancer. What do you think of that?
Well, see, that just tells you that we don't really know what we're doing.
Because aspirin's acid, acetylsalicylic acid.
Right. So if we thought that the acid was the problem that was causing the Barrett's esophagus and causing the cancers, then we wouldn't really want to give those people aspirin, because that would make the acidity worse, and it should make ulcers form there. So that not being the case, it tells you that all these drugs we're using, those proton pump inhibitors like Acefex and Protonix and Nexium and Prilosec. All those drugs may help you with symptoms, but they're not getting at the real problem.
And they have side effects.
Oh, for sure. So, I mean, you're looking at, if you take them for a couple of years, your risk of osteoporosis goes up 50%.
Well, you're only supposed to take them 6 weeks, aren't you?
Well, they're approved for 8 weeks by the FDA, and if you use it off-label longer than that, you can. It's legal. But then you have to expect these other problems to occur, like osteoporosis, and because you can't absorb B12 in the absence of acid in the stomach, you won't absorb B12, and that will put you at risk for a higher or bigger chance of developing senile dementia. You also won't be able to absorb iron or magnesium or calcium. And if you take these drugs for a period of time that amounts to much, you're going to wind up with like an addiction to it, because after you've been on it more than 8 weeks, about 40% of people will, when they stop, have symptoms of acid indigestion again, so caused by the withdrawal.
So then they think they need to take it again, and it's a vicious cycle. Well, that's really something. Most doctors, I don't think, tell people that they're not supposed to take them more than 6-8 weeks.
Well, that's right. It's because they get desperate about how do I control the symptoms. And yet there are much better ways to control the symptoms. I mean, we have a product called licorice root extract, which is a tremendous product that does a lot to do what? It makes the intestinal tract make a thicker mucus from the mouth to the anus. And in that, when you have that thicker mucus there, it protects it against bile or against acid or against other toxic things that when they're in direct contact with the lining of the gastrointestinal tract will cause an injury.
Would you think that you could reverse the changes in the esophagus so that they look like it was an esophagus instead of like an intestine down in that area?
By doing what?
By using the DGL or something to
protect it. Well, nobody's done the study. I mean, it would be very interesting, and that's a really good, insightful question, Vicki, that I've never heard anybody ask before, that they should be asking, because there is a safe way, because licorice root extract doesn't have side effects that we know of, unless you don't like the taste of licorice, it'll taste bad.
Well, the reason you do DGL, deglycerinated licorice root extract, is because it doesn't raise your sodium levels.
Well, it doesn't raise your blood pressure. That's right. So what we have here is a beautiful system that is the top off of a great story that explains the relationship between hiatal hernia, Barrett's esophagus, and cancer. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we'll be back taking your calls after Vicki's final 2020 tip.
Well, here's Maxine on If My Body Was a Car. If my body was a car, this is the time I would be thinking about trading it in for a newer model. I've got bumps and dents and scratches in my finish, and my paint job is getting a little dull, but that's not the worst of it. My headlights are out of focus, and it's especially hard to see things up close. Well, I know how that feels.
I'm getting
my other cataract surgery tomorrow.
Good luck tomorrow, Vicki.
My traction is not as graceful as it once was. I slip and slide and skid and bump into things, even in the best of weather. My white walls are stained with varicose veins, and it takes me hours to reach my maximum speed. My fuel rate burns inefficiently. But here's the worst of it. Almost every time I sneeze, cough, or sputter, either my radiator leaks or my exhaust backfires.
Oh, jeez, poor Maxine.
Uh-oh. You got to have a sense of humor, you know, with aging. Otherwise, you're done for.
I'll tell you what, Vicki, I wouldn't want to be 2 days younger, because that means I would have to relearn the things that I studied so hard to learn the last 2 days. And if you go back over the years and want to be 20 again, I'm going to have to be the dummy I was when I was 20 compared to what I know now.
Well, I'd like to look like I did when I was younger, but then you'd really look like an old man.
Jeez, that's right, I would. So that's great. All right, the lines are open. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputi with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
With up to 90% of cardiovascular disease being preventable and still the main cause of death in Europe and the U.S., and causing like 50% of all European deaths, Europe is moving toward the health of the whole population instead of focusing on individuals at high risk. So the change would be automatic?
Uh-huh.
I mean, what does this mean, and how will this plan be more effective?
Well, if you change, I mean, the way you can make rules, okay, that will help people to make changes. You're not ever really going to make them last long because legislation never changes how people feel about something. But if you can enforce them, it does make a change. So if you ban smoking or you ban alcohol or you require people to do exercise, I mean, all those things are going to change your risk factors better than once you've got the disease and then trying to go back and fix it.
Sure, better than a poly pill.
Oh, and so much safer.
We really do need to clean up the environment in our talk.
Well, that too, but wouldn't it be good to inspire people to do exercise? What happens if in school we bring PE back so people are actually doing that? And not just in grade school, but in high school and college and every level of education.
And how about in corporations?
Oh, absolutely. Some corporations do. The ones that are smart have done something to increase their exercise program, so they actually sponsor maybe an hour a day at the gym on the time that they're being paid. And what happens is people don't get sick as often. They don't get as many heart attacks and strokes. We know that exercise does wonderful things.
And they have more energy. They're not as depressed. They're not depressed.
Exactly.
They're happy.
Great studies out of Duke showing that exercise is as effective as Prozac just with 1 hour three times a week, and that's with full-dose Prozac. So that's an impressive statistic.
Well, I'm glad that Europe is thinking about this paradigm shift of prevention. And this is, you know, in the U.S. we talk about it a bit, but it's just kind of started because more what we want to do is to stop it after the cat's already out of the bag. And so we need to be thinking about what changes would make a difference and would save lives. And how can we be well if we're surrounded by toxins that are in and on and around us, and we talk about chemtrails and you know.
Well, just look at all the 100,000 or so chemicals we brought into the environment in the last 75 years.
Yeah, try nuclear power.
Well, even, I mean,
not supposed to be clean.
Just look at DDT or the pesticides or the hormones or the antibiotics that we're putting in a lot of the food we have. You don't have to go to radioactive explosions.
Yeah, but in California, we put all these nuclear power plants right on fault lines, for earthquake fault lines.
Well, it's insane.
It's really crazy. But what strategies is this group in Europe recommending?
Well, they're looking at changing things by helping through advertising in part. So what we have is ads that are put out by a good organization rather than by a pharmaceutical company or somebody who's making a product that they want to sell to you but isn't good for you, like some food, fructose corn syrup.
Yeah, taxing that instead of giving a subsidy for the corn.
Well, yeah. I mean, high fructose corn syrup is and sugars of all kinds are responsible to a large extent for this epidemic of obesity that we have and of type 2 diabetes. So if we could stop subsidizing the corn industry, that would be a step in the right direction. And what would happen if we subsidize people that make healthy fruits and vegetables? Don't you think that'd be a step forward? But we don't do that.
Yeah, and if we took those taxes and helped out and gave the subsidies to the healthy foods.
Yeah, well, that's right.
People could afford more of the organic and the healthy foods, and maybe we could get rid of some of this GMO and everything and get some stricter regulations and encourage people in that direction.
Well, there's no question we're moving in the right direction. I think we absolutely are making some progress by thinking about things like this. What we can't do is just by proclamation form it. Anyway, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. We have a call from Dorothy from South Carolina. Hi, Dorothy. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Here's another question for you, or insight is really what I'm looking for.
Okay.
My sister, who's almost 75 and always been so, you know, she's very active, you know, exercise and so forth, except she had one bad habit. Well, actually, it was two. Alcohol and cigarettes, especially cigarettes. But anyway, so she's just recently had her one of her lung lobes removed, and you know why, cancer, of course.
Yeah.
And they said that they didn't see any anywhere else. Well, when they sent her home, she had to come back the next day, and she has MRSA.
Yeah.
So now she's, for several weeks, she's going to be in a medical facility where they're giving her stronger and stronger antibiotics.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if you have any insights or comments or whatever. I know
sure
you're not
do.
A doctor. Go ahead.
You know, the MRSA, the methicillin-resistant staph infections, are resistant a lot of the time to all antibiotics. So using an antibiotic may not do much good at all. What you can do is you can build up her immunity.
Most of these places don't allow you to bring your own supplements.
You know that not only bring your own supplements, you need to bring your own food.
You aren't getting there. When
you
I went into the hospital.
You don't want to go to the hospital and be on that hospital diet because it's not going to do you much good.
No, you just get weaker.
Think if she asked the doctor might put her on a probiotic?
Who knows? I mean, there would be a lot of things that you could do that would be very smart to do, but it doesn't always come out the way that you would like.
Yeah.
I think it's highly unlikely that you're going to find a medical doctor in a hospital treating MRSA infections that's going to be open to using vitamin C IV.
Yeah, that's what she and I have talked about that before this even happened. High-dose intravenous vitamin C.
That would be one thing I would consider. I would also use probably high-dose vitamin D. And then there are a lot of immune supplements, things like the mushrooms, the shiitake mushrooms.
Yeah, I love them. Go ahead.
Yeah, IP6 is another one. There are a lot, and probiotics, like Vicki said, are really important.
Mm-hmm.
And then trying to support the intestinal tract to be healthy because it's the largest immune organ in the body.
Yes, and I know, and they're destroying it, and she's getting weaker. But anyway, yeah.
Well, those are the things, Dorothy, that you're facing, and I'm really sorry that you're in that position. I know what it's like because I was in the hospital about 9 months ago dying myself and mm-hmm. having to regulate my own care, doing things that were not typical of what they do in a hospital. And if I wasn't a doctor, I'd be dead today.
That's right. Well, when I went into hospital for a broken leg, I had my friend sneak in their supplements. So I was out in a couple of days.
Well, Dorothy, listen, it's been good talking to you. Good luck
Thank
with
you
that. I'm sorry that you're facing what you are.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. The number is 888-874-4888. We have a call from Walter from Manhattan. Hi, Walter.
How you doing, Doc? Hey, forget Batman and Robin. We got Dr. Len and Vicki.
All right. Let's go, man.
Hey, I was thinking of that Barrett's esophagus. Now, isn't the real problem a lack of hydrochloric acid in the stomach, which closes the lower esophageal sphincter and opens up the pyloric valve?
So well, you may have a point there.
Lactic acid from fermentation in the stomach, the fumes of which come up the esophagus, causes all the problems.
Well,
so wouldn't a good protocol be to use what you mentioned about deglycerized licorice and a little bit of acid now, slowly increasing it to close everything up and make sure that the stomach empties on time, no gastroparesis? Wouldn't that be the answer?
You know, you're right. I like that
right.
kind of thinking, Walter.
You
a lot of
man.
People who have hiatal hernias are definitely acid insufficient.
Right.
Not excessive
and they're
acid.
All, and they're all taking antacids.
That's right. That and the blocker.
That's medical malpractice.
Well, you got a good point there. And, you know, even the gastroenterologists don't measure the amount of acid that's in the stomach. Because
Heidelberg.
It's a kind of a complicated thing to do. Well, it's not that complicated, but they should be
Heidelberg
doing it.
Test.
Because a lot of people are being treated with the wrong thing. And using these drugs is absolutely wrong. So, Walter, that's a great point. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
Have a great day. Boy, I like calls like that.
Boy, he's great.
Because he kind of put together a lot of something I just kind of looked over. But he's right, so I want to give him my accolades for that. Thanks for the call, Walter. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we're back talking about this problem. What do we do when we have this big epidemic of cardiovascular disease? How do we put the brakes on that, and how do we turn it around? And a lot of this idea about lifestyle is really the key to it that we've overlooked. So if we will do things like exercise on a regular basis, eat a healthy food that has all the nutrition we need, reduce our levels of stress, weigh what we should, all these things would not put us at so high a risk for developing this problem. So I'm really inspired by the possibility of prevention. And see, prevention is the one thing we didn't get from the Affordable Care Act. There were a few things that were suggested in that, and it's a step in the right direction, but it's the furthest thing from where we need to go that I can imagine. So we need to go back and teach more of that. We need things like what they're doing in Walnut Creek with the Walnut Creek Wellness City Challenge. There, what happened is a bunch of people got together, said the food that we're feeding our kids is trash, there's too much high fructose corn syrup, there's trans fat in it, there's not enough fiber. And so about 30 of us got together and brought together people who were professors at many different universities, who were experts in nutrition, and we came up with a protocol that we instituted in all the cities in Contra Costa County in California. And we got the mayors to take what we call the Walnut Creek Wellness City Challenge pledge, which is that they would make sure that we get the high fructose corn syrup out of the schools, we'd make sure there was enough fiber in the food, and we would allow no trans fats in any food, any place, because it's the wrong thing. So that's what we're doing. And that's now active. That needs to be done not just at the local level. It needs to be done at the national level as well. And until we make these kinds of changes and we've got government support from it, it's going to have to come from the grassroots up. And, of course, that's why we're talking to you. Get out there with your people, okay, who are in your school departments and start talking about what the hell are we feeding our kids.
And start at home.
Yeah, definitely start at home and teach them if you know any better. And if you don't, learn about it because it's absolutely vital. Our kids are all getting fat and getting diabetes and hypertension and heart attacks and strokes. By the time they're 40 years old, there's going to be an epidemic of these diseases. So we need to get rid of the direct-to-consumer ads as well. You know, there's only two countries in the world that allow them. One is this country and the other is New Zealand. And it's just too much.
You know, we want to become more coordinated.
Well,
everybody wants to become more coordinated. And I thought this little article was kind of interesting. Their answer is to take piano lessons and learn to play with both hands.
Well,
they showed that music benefits the brain. So how does it do this?
Well, see, the brain is very interesting. We used to think that the brain couldn't adjust. It couldn't make new cells. It couldn't change its pathways, and everything was fixed. And, of course, when we don't know much about what's going on, we make all kinds of predictions that turn out to be false. And here's another one. Because our brains have something called neuroplasticity. What does that mean? It means it's a process where the brain automatically reconstructs itself in response to a certain task that you practice, like playing the piano or doing things left-handed instead of right-handed, so that the internal structure of the brain adapts to it so it's best suited to work on it. And that's a beautiful thing because it means we can do what? We can change. All those grooves that get set in our brain that take us in a certain direction and have us comfortable in zones that are not healthy for us, those can be changed. And one of the ways you can do that is with music. So there have been some people in Italy at the University Hospital San Rafael in Milan who have done some of this study. And it's something like brain gym stuff. Maybe some of you have heard about what the brain gym is. It's a way of exercising your brain in the way that's foreign to you that allows it to open itself up to take in information, process it in a different way, and change your patterns. And these researchers looked at people who were not musical at all, had no skill on the piano, taught them lessons for a few weeks, and then looked at their EEGs, and they looked at transcranial magnetic stimulation, and what they found were big changes. If they had done functional MRIs, they'd have found bigger changes yet. And eventually, I'm sure they will, along with SPECT scans.
So it sounds like a good idea to add piano lessons to your list of things for exercising your brain, like crossword puzzles and exercise. And
well, I know. And what is this talking about? It's talking about the epigenetics of the brain. Now, what do I mean by that? We think that our DNA is fixed, and yet our DNA is not fixed. It adapts to our environment, to the things that we stress our brain with. And then it changes the way it is, so the DNA becomes different, and our genes become different, and we wind up in a place where we actually are different, and that can be changed immensely. So this idea of neuroplasticity is huge, and it really enables us to become almost superhumans. It tells us how important adaptation is and how if we use it, we won't lose it and we'll change it so we can do things that we couldn't do before. We do things that are different, and that's how we should run our lives. It's the same thing with exercise as we age, so we need to pay attention to that. Well, it looks like we're at the end of the show. I want to thank you all for joining us, and I'd like to remind you that we'll be back to talk live over what's new in the news and health and take your health questions every Monday afternoon on PRN.FM and drsaputo.com from 1 to 2 Eastern Time and 10 to 11 Pacific Time. Prescriptions for Health will also be archived on drsaputo.com as well as prn.fm.
And if you've enjoyed today's show and you'd like to have more information on the topics we discussed, go to Dr. Saputo Radio on drsaputo.com and check out our fast track videos. And remember, lifestyle is the most powerful healer in the universe. So if you want to be well, pay attention to the style in which you live your life.
Have a wonderful week. We'll be back to talk next week.